Hi everyone, I'm Gary. I'm a retired Anglican priest, a vicar, and I'm an alcoholic. As you heard, I had my last drink in August of 2014. It was 3 days before my 50th birthday. My mum died on my birthday about 10 years before that, and my birthday was always the day of a big binge and a big pity party. And I knew at that point that I was about to have that binge. I sat at a bar with my first pint of the night, and the plan was always just to have one. I reached out my arm. I decided I couldn't pick up that drink again. I turned and walked away from the bar, and I haven't had a drink since. And that makes it sound really easy, doesn't it? But it isn't. There was a lot that went on before that, which I'll try and share with you as briefly as I can. It was the end of 6 months of weekly relapses. I'd slowly stopped drinking in the day. Over the course of a few months, I'd previously been drinking three bottles of wine before lunch, and then I'd lose count. And that was every day. But I'd got to a point where I could go Monday to Friday sober and thought I was doing really well. And I was living with a lady who'd relapsed on a crack problem. And we were living together on a nudist colony, and my wife had only left about 3 months before. That's where my life was, and I was still working as a vicar. The nudist colony had a bar on site, so you didn't have to go far. You didn't even have to put your clothes on. And I headed off there for my one drink. But as I say, it was never one drink, because I was treating myself. I'd gone Monday to Friday. I could afford to have one drink because I'd proved I didn't have a problem. And then I'd drink all night, and then I'd drink all day Saturday, and then I'd sober up in time for Sunday, barely, or I'd arrive drunk Sunday morning, the 8 a.m. services, and a busy day of weddings and christenings and parish communions with a hangover and shaky hands. And then the cycle repeated. Monday, I'd stop and I'd go through to Friday and treat myself, thinking it was all going to be great. And I did that week after week, month after month for 6 months, and I was dying. I was killing myself. But that last drink, that breaking point for me was realizing that in 3 days' time I was going to have a massive bender because it was my mum's the anniversary of her death, and it was my birthday, and I was 50. And I managed to turn around and walk away. Where I got the strength, I have no idea. But there we go, I managed it. At that point, I couldn't imagine a life without alcohol. I had no idea what you would do in a day where you weren't having a drink. I mean, you couldn't go out anywhere because I couldn't interact with people if I didn't have a drink because I didn't have the confidence and all that sort of stuff. Anyway, about a year ago, I'm going to share with you something which reminded me of these early days. I was thinking about that a couple of days ago. I did one of these fundraisers. There's a month in the UK, I don't know if you do it, where you grow a moustache for charity. I think it's called Movember, Moustache November. But of course, I've got a full beard, so I had to shave the whole beard off. It's the first time in 30 years that beard had gone. And I didn't recognize myself. I had wrinkles, there were imperfections, and it took me 10 minutes a day to shave and cut myself. And that stupidly, it reminded me of my recovery because in those early days, there was lots of stuff that was covered up, lots of stuff that was hidden. It wasn't nice to look at, but I had to look at it, and AA helped me to do that. And that program for me, it was 10 minutes a day, and then a check-in with a sponsor. And that was life-saving. And the same time it would have taken me to shave. But let's go back a little bit. My full title is the Reverend Squadron Leader Gary, whatever. The last time I heard someone use my full title was a UK custody sergeant in 2012. I'd been arrested 15 miles from home, early morning, asleep in someone's front garden, 15 miles from home, in my dog collar, but no trousers, and very drunk. I have no idea what happened the night before, but I'm sure I wasn't very reverend. That was a while back, and as I say, I'm 11 years sober, and I used to think the same thing. Once you get to that point, they must be safe, those people with all those years. But I still need a program. I still need meetings. I do daily work. I check in with my sponsor twice a week on the phone. Last year we went through the steps again, and you do new stuff. There's always something new to find. And it helps me. I need a program to stay focused. And complacency is dangerous. My brain now tells me that one drink maybe wouldn't hurt, that actually my memory of what happened wasn't that bad. That's the complacency, and it would be very easy to have one drink, but for me, it wouldn't be one drink. I would very quickly be back to drinking alcoholically. Everything I do alcoholically. I've never had one drink, not even as a teenager when I first started drinking. My mum was the same, and this disease took her life, and I won't let it take mine. I'll give you an example. I just had spinal surgery and a rotator cuff transplant. I've had my rotator cuff replaced with a muscle from a dead donor. Well, it's amazing what they can do. Needless to say, I've been in a lot of pain while I'm getting better, and I am getting better. My doctor prescribed me morphine, and the bottle turned up with a note on which said, take as required. And I was straight on the phone saying, you cannot write that to an alcoholic. You know, I'm an alcoholic. As required doesn't work. We need something else. And we talked it through, and he gave me patches, slow release patches of painkillers. It lasts for 7 days. There's no bottle in the background where I can take a bit extra, more than the 5 mils, take six, because, six is probably good, isn't it? That honesty saves lives. We need to be honest with ourselves and with other people. I don't care who knows I'm an alcoholic. I'm lucky I'm retired, so I can do that. Let's go back to my background. I said I've always drunk alcoholically. I was born in London, England, 7 minutes after my twin brother Graham, who never let me forget it. As we hit 60, he stopped moaning about being 7 minutes older. 5 years later, my younger brother Keith joined us. Mum later confessed that the night he was conceived, she'd done a bottle of cooking sherry that was supposed to go on a Christmas cake. My first drink, I was nine. It was a family party, and bottles of brightly coloured stuff all over every work surface in the kitchen. Me and my cousin took a bottle up to a bedroom, and I drank till I passed out, and I loved it. A few years later, the Scouts had a cheese and wine party for parents, and they asked me to help clear the glasses. And I cleared a lot of wine glasses. They weren't necessarily empty, but I cleared them, and I was taken home in disgrace. It's always been to oblivion. Moving on, I left school at 16. The school wanted me to leave. I'd set fire to a toilet block, and they weren't too impressed. I joined the RAF. They weren't too worried about that sort of sting. I was already drinking to blackout when at 17 I met a girl at a party. I was drunk, she was sober. We married at 21. I look back now, it's far too young. She had no idea what she was letting herself in for with me. I left the RAF after the Falklands War, and I had a degree in electronics and a daily drinking habit. They subsidize alcohol in the forces here. I don't know if it's the same in the States. I drifted. I left a lot of jobs just before I was sacked. I worked as a social worker. I worked in electronics. I worked teaching. I worked with adults with learning difficulties. I've heard people say that they worked in a job where everybody drank. There was a drinking culture. For me, I sought out the people who drank like me. And if there wasn't a drinking culture, I could start one. I wanted people who didn't mind going for a drink or two at lunchtime, because I needed that. So after a lot of drifting between jobs, and now a very alcoholic drinker, I sought ordination in the Church of England. I'd been a churchgoer all my life. They sent me to Oxford University to get a degree in theology, because that's what you've got to have. And they put me through a barrage of tests and said I was dyslexic, I'd got ADD, attention deficit disorder, and autistic spectrum disorder. So rather than actually doing any work, I ran the college bar for 3 years, and they gave me a degree because I could dance on a bar drunk and not fall off it. And they released me as a vicar onto the parishes in the south of England, and I loved it. But it was chaos, complete chaos. Weddings and funerals and baptisms, there's always a party afterwards, and I was always drunk. And as you can imagine, lots went wrong. I could bore you with stories, but actually, those kind of things, they kind of glorify it to a certain amount. Some of the things that went wrong that weren't so funny. I was invited to talk to at a local crematorium. My diary said, come and talk at the crematorium to a bereaved family from last year. That's what I wrote down. When I got there, it was actually the invitation was to every family they'd taken a service for over the previous year. There was about 1,500 people outdoors. There was a Salvation Army band, people everywhere, and I was the guest speaker, and I hadn't prepared anything. So I spoke about love for a while and sat down. I was drunk. I got away with that. My parishioners at my last church wrote a letter to the bishop. I've got it somewhere. They wrote praising me for my tireless service to the poor, desperate street drinkers of my town. I could be seen ministering to these people on park benches, in the park, in the town, sitting with them for days, clearly preaching the word of the Lord. I was drinking with them. They used to take me home. The door key was under the doormat. And I've got a letter praising me for it. But there was serious stuff too. It sounds funny. One funeral, I put the wrong date in my diary and I got it. I didn't turn up. I got a phone call when it was, I was halfway. Yeah, it was a 20-minute service and I was 10 minutes late and it was a 20-minute drive away. They didn't get a vicar for a funeral. And you can't undo that kind of stuff. The rest is funny, but things like that is awful. My marriage failed at that point. My adult children broke contact with me, and I don't blame them. They still don't know I'm sober, and I have no idea where they're living. And that's a consequence of my drinking. I live with that. But anyway, at that point, no wife, no children. That was when I moved into the nudist colony because it was only up the road from the church, so I could run the church whilst living with the naturists. And I moved in a lady with a crack habit. And that was another, just when you think you're at rock bottom, there's a trap door and you go a bit lower. She introduced me to a magic white powder you put up your nose and it buys you a couple of hours of sobriety. And you justify it. You find ways to say that's brilliant. That worked until a wedding where I mistakenly, I went to the drawer where she kept all of this magic powder and I pulled some stuff out and put it up my nose. And it wasn't what I thought. It wasn't the stimulant I thought it was. It was a drug called ecstasy, MDMA, which is a rave dance drug. So drunk, I snorted ecstasy and went to take a wedding. It didn't go well. I woke up the next day with no idea whether they were married or not. Apparently, I went back to the party afterwards and danced all night, and I'm not surprised. But that's not normal. It's not normal. It was around then that the arrest started happening, and the bishops. I was diagnosed with MS, and the bishop decided that actually this was a good excuse. They could get rid of me with it, with let me retire because of ill health. They did nothing to try and support the drinking. They just gave me a house near the seaside and got rid of me. So I moved down to Bournemouth from the naturist place, and I stopped drinking. I was about 3 months sober when I moved down to Bournemouth. But I had no program. I wasn't doing meetings. I didn't even know about meetings, really. But I did arrange to go to a day centre, drop-in place for people with drink problems. And somebody there, a lady I'm still in touch with, dragged me to AA. She said, if you don't go to meetings, you will drink. And she saved my life. And they, AA taught me this is a threefold illness. It covers your mind, body, and spirit. The whole, everything's got to be looked at. I did all of that. I got myself a temporary sponsor, then a sponsor, it was great. I did mindfulness and social groups. I went to church as a punter without having to do any of the stuff. And AA was my daily structure. I'm now blessed with a close relationship. My best friend, she's 13 years sober herself. She calls us friends without benefits, which kind of it's friends with benefits without benefits. Her 17-year-old son called me dad. His dad's nowhere to be seen, but I've been in his life since he was eight. He's 17 now. Couple of years ago, he was diagnosed with ADHD and ASD, autistic spectrum disorder, and I said, "Oh, I've got that." The people who do all the tests and stuff decided that the family, the three of us, should do a course on communication. And there was something lovely there. I'm going to leave with you as we draw to a close. We've got 5 minutes, almost 6 minutes left. This communication course, me and the then 15-year-old and my friend without benefits, on a Zoom thing, learning about communication. And we learned about the different ways we communicate. There's the way you talk to family, the way you talk to friends or colleagues. It's all different. We learned about verbal communication, non-verbal communication, email, journaling, all that sort of stuff. And of course, the one which I want to share with you, that they called intrapersonal voice. It's the voice in our head. It's the way we talk to ourselves. It's the most important for me. If you're talking to a child, you would never constantly tell a child that they're useless, that they're naughty, that they're stupid, that they're never going to get things, that they're a waste of space. You wouldn't do that to a child. But my inner voice does that to me all the time. And I think we're all guilty of it, if I'm honest. And it should be me, not we, but I think we all do it. We're all our own worst enemy. AA promises us a new freedom. And I'd like to suggest that our new freedom should include freeing ourselves from negative self-talk. I'd ask you to try and be your own inner cheerleader. Be kind to yourself. Don't say things about yourself internally that you wouldn't say to someone else to their face, because it's not what you should be doing. You know, you can get this, you can do this, you will have a wonderful life, and you deserve it. And don't let yourself tell yourself any different. Be your own best friend. Establish good communication with yourself from the start. Be mindful, be honest, cut yourself some slack because you deserve it. I still carry my 24-hour AA chip. It's the only one I carry, not the 11-year one. It reminds me of when I was counting my sobriety in hours to begin with, and then days and months. And now I still need reminders, and that's why that's the one chip I carry. It reminds me of the imperfections that are just under my beard. I still need to focus on just today because I keep worrying about what's happening tomorrow and next week and what happened last week. I can't change yesterday, and worrying about tomorrow won't change it at all. I haven't had a drink today. I'm not going to have a drink today. I've been through enough to know that I can't have that one. I just have to not pick up the first drink. That's all I have to do. It's that simple. I say it's simple. I have to structure my day. If I go to the supermarket, I don't know what it's like in the States. I think you have liquor stores. We have supermarkets with alcohol openly displayed in aisles. I won't go down those aisles because I don't trust myself this far on. And I know that's all I can do today is not do that kind of stuff, not put myself in danger, not test myself almost, just trust that I've definitely got one more drink in me. I probably haven't got one more recovery. So I'm not going to do this again. I'm going to leave you with that. Be your own inner cheerleader. Thank you ever so much.